In February 2018, Brittany Tiger was 26 years old when she vanished from her home in Ada, Oklahoma. It would be a month later when her body would be found just 15 miles away from where she lived. Although her death has been ruled undetermined, her family is certain that she was murdered. This is Brittany's story.
Hey guys, this is Ash.
This is Shiashi.
This is Maggie, and you're listening to We Are Resilient.
That's...
Speaking of...
Tribal police. Do you ever scare yourselves when you're doing the research?
I don't get paranoid at home. I think, if anything, I just maybe think of things differently after I read these cases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like Ash and I talk about running. I think they're, after doing more of these cases, I'm a little more cautious now. Being out in situations like that, not so much paranoid at home, though.
Just in hearing these stories, like Maggie said, I'm more careful. I'm more aware of my surroundings. I think I'm smarter now. I protect myself a little better now. Before, I didn't
I think, we,
think about it.
Yeah, definitely more aware, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, even the other day in Walmart, like, this guy, for some reason, like, pushed his buggy, like, an inch from me. And I turned around and immediately was like, I wanted to push his buggy back. Because I was thinking, what are you trying to do? Like, corner me in? He honestly probably just wasn't paying attention. So I was about to, like, ram this buggy in this guy. And
did you make eye contact? Like, I'm not the one.
Well, I was really cautious because it was this gentleman by himself, and his wife came, and I was like, oh, he's just oblivious. So.
Well, it's like, you never know. How many times do we see on, like, Facebook stories of people being followed at, like, Walmart and Target and being followed out to the parking lot?
Well, there's been instances, too, where people in our local community have reported very creepy vehicles following people running around town, especially because a lot of women run through town.
Well, and that's happened to you.
It has, and I actually did call my police friends to come pick me up because mm-hmm. I had ran from my house and I didn't feel comfortable running back home because I didn't know. The same two trucks with out-of-state license plates, I would run and then they'd be in a parking lot. And as soon as I would run by, they would pull out of the parking lot and move into another parking lot like ahead. So I'd run by again, and they did it three times.
Oh my gosh.
That's happened to me before. Me and my friend were walking and she noticed that the same car kept stopping every so often. And so finally they stopped at a gas station that we were approaching. And I just stopped and I just stared at them. Like, I just stared. Because I'm a more aggressive type. Like, if you were to follow me in Food Lion or Walmart, I would probably go somewhere. Like, the canned soup aisle. And throw cans of, I would throw cans of soup at you if I felt threatened.
Uh-huh.
You know, because... And I understand it's different for different people. You know, whatever you feel in the moment is what you feel. But you have a right to protect yourself.
Yeah. Well, you just never know how you're going to respond.
Well, that, and, you know, when there's two vehicles and one girl running, like, I'm really vulnerable in that situation. And even if I wanted to fight and, you know, do whatever, the likelihood of me actually, like, making it out of that, if that were, like, an abduction case or...
And it's sad that I've talked to other people that run, males mostly. I'm like, when you go to run, what do you think about? What's your typical checklist? Or they say, my shoes, my route, my watch, the weather. I said, yeah, I think about all those things too. And then I think about how I have to wear my hair. I can't wear it in a high ponytail. I either have to wear it in a bun. And it's annoying to run with a bun if you have long hair. You have to tuck your ponytail into the back of your shirt. If you want to run with music, you can't run with it loud because you have to be able to hear.
Mm-hmm. Or you can't run with both AirPods.
You have to carry pepper spray.
Yeah.
You have to make sure that when you turn your Strava on that you...
share your location.
You share your location. You share it with your emergency contact. Those are about the things that I have to go
That's
through whenever I go run. But men don't have to think about that. I quit running in the mornings. A guy was on a bike and I see him coming. I move over in the grass off the sidewalk. And as he passes me, he like blows me a kiss and it's like, good morning, beautiful. Like it was just really creepy. The last mile of my run, I had to keep running with like looking behind me, watching, seeing if he was coming back. And that was kind of creepy. So that's when I quit running in the morning times before work.
Well, I don't think I have the endurance to run, because if I have to keep running and not stop, I'm not going to make it.
Yeah, I think I PR'd that last mile.
You know, that's something that really pisses me off, too, is that women have to worry about being sexualized, even when we're sweaty and running and just trying to do something on a daily basis. You should not be running down the road on a sidewalk and have to worry about some man mm-hmm. trying to accost you. I probably would have kicked his bike. I hate stuff like that. It's so frustrating.
It is frustrating. I moved out of his way. He could have went on by and not said a thing. And I'd have been fine. I wouldn't have even gave it a second thought. But I think because just the way he approached me, it was kind of scary.
But that's part of this whole issue, too, is the MMIW issue is that women are still viewed as objects.
Yeah.
Which is why the MMIW, specifically for women and girls, is more relevant. You know, there's plenty of missing and murdered Indigenous people out there.
Yeah.
But there's so many more women and girls because they're objectified.
And sex trafficked.
It's scary. And, you know, I said it in the first episode, but let us run. Let me brisk walk.
Yeah, let us just do our thing and just go on.
Let us live our lives. All right. So are we ready to get into this episode today?
Yes, we're ready.
Today, I'm going to talk about Brittany Tiger from Ada, Oklahoma. She was the youngest of three sisters. Now, if you don't know where Ada, Oklahoma is, it's about 88 miles outside Oklahoma City. There wasn't anything I could find that was specific to what tribe she was a part of. So I'm going to give just a quick breakdown of the five big tribes that are generally described as the civilized tribes, which is the Cherokee, Creek, Chickasaw, Choctaw, and Seminole. These tribes were called civilized because apparently way back in the day, they were seen as more civilized than other nations.
Well, in the Constitution, we're listed as merciless Indian savages. So we're not very historically
looked upon.
Culturized, like culture.
In a great way. But yeah, so I read that and then I was reading about just how offensive being called civilized at that time was. And I'm like, you know, that's a great point because our people weren't looked upon as being anything other than savages. So I thought that was really interesting. But those are the five big main tribes in Oklahoma. These tribes, along with various other nations, were part of the Trail of Tears, which was a really, really dark, tragic part of this country's history that's not really taught too much in school. It saw the forced relocation of Indigenous people from the southeastern region of the United States to land that was primarily and is now the state of Oklahoma. From my understanding, there is no exact approximation of how many people died on the Trail of Tears, but I think it's estimated between 3,000 and 6,000 people.
Doesn't sound like a lot, but for Native American people, that is catastrophic.
You and I, she actually have biked to Oklahoma from Georgia.
Yeah.
On the Trail of Tears that are the Eastern, well, the Cherokee Nation traveled on, and it's not an easy journey.
Can you imagine having an infant or a baby or a child?
Well, having to walk and not have shoes or
in the winter
time to rest or food, water.
Well, what makes me mad too is that, you know, talking about the Trail of Tears, these people literally marched other human beings, children, moms, dads, babies, grandma, grandpas, through the snow, no shoes, no resources, but we're uncivilized.
Right? None of that makes sense.
And they weren't treated as humans.
No.
They weren't treated as equals because a lot of nights our ancestors had to sleep in the fields, naked, no shoes, no clothes, no blanket, nothing.
But again, we're uncivilized.
We're uncivilized.
We're the savages.
And what's interesting is I don't think people really understand the Native perspective when it comes to Andrew Jackson, considering he was the one that signed the Indian Removal Act and was a big part of why this happened the way it did. So if anybody is wondering why we have such a issue with Andrew Jackson, that's one of the reasons.
It's a tragic story. If you don't know about it, research, look it up, read about it.
It really is a really dark part of this country's history. It is part of this country's history. And like I said, it's not really taught in depth like it should be.
Well, what's sad to me is that this country has a history of putting human beings against human beings simply because of race or background or, you know, ethnicity. And it continues today in all these stories we tell.
There wasn't anything I could find that was specific in which tribe Brittany was a part of. So going back to Ada, Oklahoma. So I couldn't find anything specific that says which tribe Brittany was a part of. So in 2017, Brittany was 26 years old, living in Ada, Oklahoma. She was described as a very dedicated mother to her three young children who at the time were ages 9, 7, and 4, which that had to be in a handful. In September that same year, she got married to a man named Will Gomez, who was not the biological father of her three children, but from all accounts, Brittany and Will seemed to be very happy. They had this new family. They moved into a new home. Everything seemed to be really happy for them. 5 months into the marriage, on February 11th, 2018, All three children were staying the night with their biological dad and ultimately would never see their mom again. So in an article with NBC News, Will would tell police that on that night, he and Brittany went to bed early to get a night of rest. As you all know, when you get a night away from the kids, a lot of time you just want to sleep and relax. He apparently woke up from his sleep around 3:30 a.m. to find that Brittany was gone.
So she just got up in the middle of the night and left?
According to Will. So Brittany's mother, Bernadine, told authorities that around 11 p.m. the night before she disappeared, Brittany had texted her saying that she was going to leave Will. She had texted her mom and said, "I need a break from Will. I'm going to go to my sister's house in Texas." Then she sent another text message to her mom about an hour later saying she was fine and that she was having trouble with her phone. And that was the last anyone had heard from her. So a little over a week went by with Brittany's family not hearing from her. On February 19th, 2018, Brittany's half-sister, Christina, reported Brittany missing to the Ada Police Department. From my understanding, Brittany was very close to her siblings and to their mother, Bernadine. Even the family was reported to live only less than a mile away from Brittany, and Brittany never went far without telling her mother where she was. So the Ada Police Department went to Brittany's home to conduct a welfare check.
If 11 p.m. the night before was the last time someone saw her,
or her drivers, her family,
her, but who dropped the kids off the next day with the dad?
They're saying that's the last time, I guess, anyone in the immediate family. She could have had her own coordination with the father of her kids. From what I understand is there was more than one biological father, so there might have been some coordination just kind of outside the immediate family. I don't know. There was nothing specific to that. An Ada Police Department detective named Brian Engel told Dateline that Brittany's husband Will was there, and they took his statement at the house. According to the police, Will said Brittany must have left when he was sleeping, taking a couple of hoodies and a makeup bag with her. At the time, police believed that Brittany left willingly on foot, as neither she nor her husband owned a car. So there's a lot of questions here.
Yeah.
Also, according to the Ada Police Department and Jessica, who is Brittany's sister, Brittany's husband, Will, didn't seem too concerned about finding Brittany. In fact, Will was quoted as saying that he wasn't worried that Brittany was missing because it wasn't unusual for her to leave for weeks at a time. And this was disputed by Brittany's sister, Jessica, because she said it wasn't true that Brittany would not leave her kids like that.
So I have a lot of questions.
Same.
First of all, if your significant other gets out of bed, you're going to notice.
And just leaves. And they leave all the time.
Well, that's not always true. Some people are heavy sleepers.
Well, I wake up at everything because my ice machine makes ice and I'm like, oh my God.
Who's breaking in?
Well, I told you I heard one little creak and I thought, well, no, I was wide awake. I don't have an excuse for that.
So I guess I have questions around kind of what the mother's thoughts are on the accusation that she leaves all the time and what her thoughts are about her leaving in the middle of the night with no contact to anyone.
They are adamant that this is not typical behavior for Brittany and that something is very, very wrong.
So the husband is saying that it's
typical.
It's typical for her to be gone, but her family's saying it's not.
Well, yes. In fact, he told investigators when Brittany disappeared, he just carried on with his own routine and even felt comfortable leaving the city for a while. He also, get this, said that he didn't think a detective was on duty when she disappeared, and that's why he didn't call or report her missing. Apparently, he thinks that nobody was working.
At the police department.
And, you know, then a week later, it's not her husband reporting her missing, it's the sister.
Well, also, I mean, any grown adult, like if her leaving regularly for weeks at a time was something that she did, why would she take two hoodies and a makeup bag? I mean, I go on a weekend trip and I take like 18 pairs of underwear. So, I mean, if I was gone for 2 weeks.
That's how I pack. I pack like I'm going to be like falling in some mud. I'm going to like, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, 18 if times she a day. Knew, like, if this was regular and, you know, he says like this is something that she did often, she would pack, right?
I would think so.
She called her mom and said she was leaving him.
She was going to leave him, and then she was going to stay with her other sister in Texas. Got a message an hour later and said that Brittany said she was fine and that she was having trouble with her phone.
So when was that message?
The night before the night she disappeared.
So this is the 11 p.m., the last time anyone heard from her.
The last time her mother heard from her. So Will apparently traveled to Shawnee, Oklahoma, which is about 48 miles away from Ada, to visit his dad. He had said he was mad at Brittany for leaving, and that's why he left. Jessica even stated that during the week they didn't hear from her. He didn't reach out at all to the family to see if Brittany was at their house.
So he's just like dipped and is like not worried at all.
Well, you know, my wife left. I haven't seen or heard from her, but...
So did the biological dads raise concerns about her not coming back to pick them up?
I didn't recall reading anything that said anything about the biological dads having any kind of statement or anything like that. I think there was just growing concern, maybe just because this wasn't typical for her. So, I don't know. And I read a lot of articles.
You know, this goes back to what Asha's always saying, like... Even if you feel like something you say won't be helpful, just say it anyway. Be like, oh, well, here's what happened this day when I talked to her.
It's so always those tiny details. It's those tiny details that can, like, you know, when you watch, like, true crime documentaries or hear things, it's always that one little comment or one little thing that makes somebody be like, okay, that doesn't connect, and can just unravel a whole plethora of things. Plethora is the word of the day.
Yeah, it just sounds suspicious that she's gone.
The husband ain't concerned?
And he's not concerned.
At all.
Tell us more.
Okay. Now, on the Dateline report, it stated that on March 16th, 2018, about a month after Brittany disappeared, a local cattleman came upon Brittany's body in a wooded area by Cullahoma Indian Stompgrounds. This was about 15 miles away from Brittany's house.
So they found her body on the stompgrounds?
By the stompgrounds.
So stompgrounds, I guess every tribe may be different in how they conduct their ceremonies, but it's a traditional way of people of the tribes go and they show their appreciation and their...
It can be used for like religious ceremonies, celebrations, well,
it's
right?
Church.
Yeah.
It's
like traditional church.
So it's a sacred place, a sacred ceremony.
And she was just dumped right outside the one in Cullahoma.
How long was she missing?
It was about a month.
Before her body was found mm-hmm. by the cattleman?
They conducted an autopsy report later that month that was released that said the cause of Brittany's death is unknown. It also reported that Brittany was found lying on her back with her hands above her head in a state of decomposition. There was also a report that said her clothes were pulled up and her body was laid out, consistent with her being dragged into the field from the road and left there. The report also said dark hairs were found in both of her hands, as well as a red hemorrhage on the right side of her chest.
Black hairs?
Dark hairs were found on both of her hands. What I'm imagining is her arms were above her head while she was being dragged to where she was at. And that whoever just left her there.
So there are obvious signs of trauma on her body?
Mm-hmm.
But her cause of death is undetermined?
Yeah. It gets a little unclear because they kind of changed how they are reporting her death.
Go back to the dark hairs. Is that human hair?
It just said dark hairs were found on both of her hands.
So maybe she fought her attacker?
That's a probability. It's a little hazy. And, you know,
but this is the whole point of an autopsy, is to get that evidence.
Yeah. And to have at least a determination of what happened.
Like, I'm sorry, I'm not a forensic pathologist, but if there are hairs in the hands of a dead person who was obviously, you know,
dragged,
placed in this spot and didn't die there, like, why would the death not be classified as suspicious?
If anything, it's just unknown. Her family did have to give her a closed casket funeral. I read a quote from Brittany's sister, Jessica, that said, quote, she had a little piece missing from her lip, and I think she was missing an eye, probably from where the animals got her, end quote. So in the Dateline article, it was stated from that same police detective from Ada, Brian Engel. He had told local media that the case would be treated as a homicide, but almost a year later, he told Dateline that there is no current evidence that a crime has been committed and the case has not officially been classified as a homicide. So technically, it's still undetermined.
So they know that her body was dragged to this field, but it's not a homicide. She just dragged herself.
She just dragged herself. It doesn't make sense because that the position of how she was found and if it was consistent with her being drugged, that would tell you right there she did not go out there on her own.
Someone took her there.
Well, that and if her toxicology report came back, like, you know, she wasn't intoxicated and there were no drugs in her system, like, what do they think happened? That she just, like, walked into this field and, I mean, what are the other options?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because as time went by, it was reported that Brittany did occasionally use drugs and that a small amount was found in her system. And her sister, Jessica, who I am quoting all throughout this episode because she has been a serious champion of justice for Brittany since the beginning, said in an article with Verified News Network that people are putting out there that she did drugs, and she's this person and she's that. Jessica said that Brittany played with her kids. She came over. She helped cook. She did other things. She went to the park. She helped with church members. She said, everybody has rough patches. That wasn't my sister. She wasn't this druggie. Now, I brought that up because, one, even if she did occasionally use drugs and there was a small amount found in her system, So what? Brittany was still a person that mattered. And I don't want us to get too far off topic, but this quote kind of really hit home for me in a lot of ways, because all of us in some capacity know somebody that has struggled or is currently struggling with addiction. And I don't necessarily like the term druggie or junkie, but that's not really important at this moment. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I feel like society tends to place a stigma on people in addiction, when in reality, I feel like addiction in any form is a symptom of underlying mental health issues or a way to cope with trauma. And I was just really floored that Brittany's family was hearing from people in her community talking about her like she brought this ending upon herself. And it's not an argument that can even really be made. And if you're out there making this kind of argument that she kind of did this to herself or it was some kind of validation for her death, you are not a nice person. Is the most polite way I could put that.
It could be any of us. We could have a bad day. We could fall on hard times. And any of us could, you know, choose that path for our life. But like you said, everyone matters.
It's not an excuse.
And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's somebody's son, somebody's daughter, somebody's mom, dad, brother, sister. It doesn't matter what they choose to do in their life. They're still important and they're still loved and still deserve to have justice in her case.
Well, that might be too how the husband was trying to play off, like, oh, she does this.
Yeah.
You know, play it off as like, oh, she's just on like a bender.
She put herself out there. She brought on herself, kind of.
Yeah. It just, I really just didn't like reading that her family was just kind of, I guess, just hearing people around them, people whispering that, you know, well, Brittany did drugs. And it's just like, you know what? She died. It's not any kind of validation for her being dead. And you know, they lost their loved one, and then you're going to talk about the reasoning is like, oh, well, she was on drugs.
Well, they should.
It doesn't matter.
They shouldn't have to defend her.
No.
While they're mourning her.
Well, do you think that this is part of the reason why the detective is, like, brushing it off?
You know, I didn't really think of it in that way, but that could very well be a reason. You know, there, like I said, there's this stigma on people who are in addiction or trying to be in recovery from addiction, and people tend to brush people off who are struggling, and it's unfair. So the Verified News Network also stated they had spoke with locals in the area, stating that there could have been a darker possibility regarding Brittany's death, and they reported talking about possibly an underground human trafficking ring in which, you know, operatives are systematically getting individuals addicted to drugs in order to prostitute them and eventually traffic them to other parts of the country, which is even a scarier scenario, but I guess it's a very real one as well.
Yeah, so that happens in our own community, whether or not we realize it.
You know, as we've done our research, the potential of human trafficking and sex trafficking has come up multiple times in these cases. You know, I think in Selena, in the documentary, it mentioned that the rest stop she disappeared at was on the right near a very big interstate that was known for trafficking. And
we've touched on this before, is, you know, she didn't have a car, didn't have a lot of resources. So those are the kind of women that they're going to target.
And even if she was targeted, even if this was somehow tied to her death, it's still not okay. It's just really scary. I think a lot of people think out of sight, out of mind. If you don't see it, mm-hmm. if you don't hear about it, it doesn't exist. I think that's why we have to talk about it, because it does exist, and you can't just keep being silent, pretending like it's not here, because it is.
Well, like you said, you know, drugs tie into a lot of different things too, not just drug use. I mean, even the drugs that we have here, like, they tie into it. Who knows what it ties into? Sex trafficking, you know, anything like that.
When we have these cases of people go missing, it's better to overreact than underreact, because you just never know what's going on or what's potentially happening to someone in your family or a friend or loved one. There was an update in this case. In March 2020, a local Ada man named Bodie Chance Starnes, who was 25, was arrested and charged in the Pontotoc District Court with unlawful disposal of a deceased corpse. According to a local news station, police had several tips that made it possible to connect Starnes to Brittany. And that includes one of Brittany's neighbors told investigators he saw Starnes and an unidentified man carrying a suitcase out of the man's apartment at night, and learned that Brittany was missing 2 weeks after seeing them move the suitcase. One woman went to police and said that Starnes made comments to her about getting rid of Brittany's body. And another tip came in from someone that said Starnes told them at an AA meeting that he helped get rid of the body.
Neighbors from his house, Starnes' house?
Brittany's neighbors saw Starnes and an unidentified man carrying a suitcase from the apartment.
From Brittany's house?
It just said out of the man's apartment at night. So it wasn't specific. These are just the tips that I saw in this local news station article when Starnes was arrested. Now, right now, he is the only arrest police have made in connection to Brittany's murder. Well, and I say murder, but technically her cause of death is still listed as undetermined. If he was arrested for unlawful disposal of a deceased corpse, then he's got to be tied to somebody who did something to her. So if they have information, the police aren't releasing that at the moment. So it's, how do you have a person arrested for helping dispose of the body, but then there's no other arrest made or any other information coming out?
Well, how does that not classify her death as a homicide?
You ask great questions.
It's like we have the story and we kind of have an ending, but we're missing a big part. What happened to her?
And did family report anything about this guy? Like, is he maybe just someone she partied with, or?
It does not say.
And even if, you know, the situation were to happen where she overdosed, like, people get charged with homicide for providing drugs.
Yeah.
So regardless, all the facts about what happened to her would lend to a homicide case.
Well, and if he's arrested for unlawful disposal of a deceased corpse, then the theory of her being drug out there is very, very valid. But still, that's the only arrest connection that's been made.
Well, I have seen cases where, you know, maybe an elderly person dies in the home and someone's trying to get their benefits or something and unlawfully disposes of the body.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't charged with homicide because it's a natural death. So that makes sense for there to only be one charge.
Yeah.
But in this situation where she's just a healthy 26-year-old woman, that doesn't make any sense at all.
So Starnes was held in custody on a $500,000 bond for this case and a $250,000 bond on a previous charge of preventing a witness from testifying. And I don't know what the specifics
are. In the same case?
It was something else. It was just another charge, I guess.
So this guy's just a nuisance.
He doesn't sound like a young up-and-coming stellar guy. In the precedent set by the McGirt versus Oklahoma ruling, Starnes' case in connection with Brittany's death was dismissed in November 2020, citing this ruling. So I'm going to try and break down for you what McGirt versus Oklahoma is. I had a little trouble understanding it, so just bear with me as I try to do my best to explain this to you all. In July of 2020, the Supreme Court ruled in McGirt versus Oklahoma that the state has no legal jurisdiction over crimes involving American Indians on tribal lands because their reservations have never been disestablished by Congress. I Googled it, and disestablish means to deprive of status or privilege. So McGirt versus Oklahoma was centered around a human garbage pile named Jim C. McGirt.
I thought you were talking about a case where, like, a bunch of bodies.
Oh, no. Just this man who's a pile of garbage. He's 71 years old, and he is Native, by the way. But in 1997, he was sentenced to 2 500-year prison sentences for molesting a child. One of the articles I read stated that the child was 4 years old at the time. McGirt challenged this rule by stating that the state courts had no authority to try him for a crime committed on reservation land, this one in particular that belongs to the Muscogee Creek Nation. Where the incident occurred, I'm assuming. He argued that Oklahoma could not exercise jurisdiction over him because under the Indian Major Crimes Act, any crime involving a Native American victim or perpetrator or occurring within recognized reservation boundaries is subject to federal jurisdiction, not state. So I'm going to include the links here because there was some law reviews and stuff that I pulled this information from for this episode.
So what ended up happening to his objection?
So since this ruling, cases have been transitioning from Oklahoma hands to federal hands ever since. Now, fortunately, McGirt did receive 3 life sentences this year from a federal judge who said McGirt's impact on criminal jurisdiction in Oklahoma played no part in his decision. He got 3 life sentences instead of the original 2. And what I read, there was a lot of information about how there was people in prison and people trying to overturn their convictions based on this landmark ruling and trying to, I think it just goes into a bunch of legalities that I don't quite understand. But again, everything that I'm telling you is going to be linked in the show notes.
But that just doesn't make, I mean, I get it, but it doesn't make any sense because he was recharged federally. So all they have to do is recharge the federal.
It wasn't double jeopardy because they were dropped. They had no jurisdiction.
Brittany's case is still kind of on the desk of the federal.
Okay, so the federal investigators haven't even really looked into it.
From my understanding.
Or
they're working on it and they just haven't released any information that they found. But what's interesting is, aside from this Verified News Network, I can't find anything that talks about Starnes, aside from the fact that he was the only connection made to Brittany's death.
So the guy that disposed of her body,
yeah,
is just dismissed on no charges. That's, because of a loophole.
That is what it's saying in this Verified News Network. Again, I'm still struggling to, I searched everywhere and I can't find anything that's specific to what else is going on with him. There has also been no updates regarding arrest, person of interest, or even if Brittany's husband Will is being investigated, since technically this is still an ongoing investigation. But why wouldn't Will be investigated?
Well, I'm sorry, but what the hell are they investigating?
I don't know. You ask great questions.
You had someone in jail who literally moved her body. Like, he didn't just, like, happen upon a body, put it in a suitcase, and throw it in a field.
He knows what happened.
So it sounds like to me that there's some still ongoing. They might have more information. They're just not releasing to the public or sharing. Because what if this did involve some kind of underground human trafficking ring? You know, this is stuff that they're trying to infiltrate, try to, I don't know.
That's so frustrating, though.
It really is, because the family is still really, they're adamant that Brittany was murdered. They're adamant that she didn't just drag herself out into the field to die. And they're upset because there's been just no movement on this. There's been nobody aside from the Starnes guy directly connected to her death.
Do you know what's sad? Is it feels like this is the same story over and over and over again.
With all of the girls.
They're really trying to keep her story alive and keep it out there. And that's something that we've also noticed in researching these cases, is that these searches and these movements to find justice for their family members or loved ones is grassroots. It's the families that are just constantly working to keep these stories and keep these cases in the news and keep people aware. I'm going to end with a quote from Jessica, who said, quote, "If it was your family member, if it was your sister, wouldn't you want justice served for them? Wouldn't you want the truth to come out?" End quote. And the answer to that is yes, Brittany deserves justice.
Well, I think, you know, when we talk about our purpose here, something that we want our listeners to know is that just by sharing one of the flyers we post to these missing people, it's bringing awareness and making sure that their stories are remaining relevant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you see a flyer that is of a missing person or of a cold case that needs more information, just share it.
Because you never know who will see it, what it can lead to.
So if you have any information on the circumstances surrounding Brittany's death, please call the Ada Police Department at 580-332-4466. I want to thank everybody for listening. I've included a ton of links in the show notes for anyone who wants to read more or try and make sense of this McGirt versus Oklahoma ruling that I probably destroyed in trying to explain. I Googled a lot. There's a lot of links, so be sure to check it out. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to We Are Resilient. For links for information found in this episode and to stay up to date on what's coming next, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at We Are Resilient Podcast. Send us an email at weareresilientpod@gmail.com or visit us at www.war-podcast.com.